Giddy up, Coastside! It's Friday, and this is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. I'm your co-host, Ruben Truthmaker, mid-coaster, dad, and futurist.
This is the other guy.
The other dude.
Other dude.
Other dude. He is a dude. In today's show, is local journalism for sale? Well, yes, but it's not corruption, it's just business. The Half Moon Bay Review is on the market.
We're also going to look at Martin's Beach. Last week we had an email come in from Steve, and he was wondering about our thoughts on how the Martin's Beach situation would play out and how that might affect other beaches around the area.
And in our why section, why Black Friday? I really need to get into this because this is something that gets right in the old Truthmaker's craw. Serious craw time here.
Have you ever participated in Black Friday?
No. Yeah. And when you see me participating in Black Friday, you will know that the end is nigh. Absolutely. All right, well, let's get right into our show today. The Half Moon Bay Review is for sale. The other dude, this is your chance to expand your media empire.
That's true. I could try to expand my empire, but as I think of that, there's businesses that I would not want to run. There would be a restaurant, which has got to be a nightmare, and right above that would be a newspaper.
Okay, so I see where you're going with this, the Half Moon Bay Review diner.
No, because then I'd have my two worst nightmares as business ideas coming at me from every direction.
Right. Well, all right. Well, let's dive into this a little more. So WIC Communications, it's a Arizona-based, I guess we'll call it a media conglomerate. It's not at the level of Fox News or Sinclair, but it owns numerous properties. They've owned the Half Moon Bay Review since 1986.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I mean, there's some stability there, and which is nice because the paper is a fixture on the coast. I believe it first opened its doors in 1898, so it is part of the coast side here. WIC owns 27 papers in 18 markets, but only one in California. So, businesses want to consolidate. They want efficiency for themselves, and having a property out here in California, not even in a big market. I mean, Bay Area, that probably looked good on paper.
Right.
But then when you get out here, 29,000 is your entire potential pool for circulation.
Right.
The business numbers don't look good on that. So I can see them wanting to get rid of it. But what's – and then part of the sale would be that whoever the buyer is going to get the building, the real estate, and probably the paper thrown in.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you get this paper.
So what are some options as far as how could this play out in a way that is productive for everybody?
Well, being productive for everybody, are we talking the coast side or are we talking WIC Communications?
Well, I'm trying to look at all sides. I'm trying to say for the coast side so that we still have a local paper for the WICs so that they can come out of it without taking too much of a beating. I mean, they've been in here for 40 years. We probably owe them a little bit of loyalty to not scalp them, I guess. And then to whoever would or what organization or individual would want to buy the paper so that they can make it work out as well. I mean, what are the options of how could it be?
Right. Well, I think WIC's going to get their money based just on the building, the real estate. But I see three potential options. Two that I had that are obvious, and one that was mentioned to me by a local citizen. So the first would be a sale to another corporate owner, to another media conglomerate of some size or shape that maybe has multiple properties, and they can kind of be doing their economy of scale of, when you have 10 of these small papers that barely make money, maybe you can pool resources. For example, Clay Lambert, who's the managing editor of the Half Moon Bay Review, is also the creative director for all of WIC Communications. So you can get some interplay there and some efficiencies where maybe people are doing multiple jobs. So if you had another corporation come in and buy that, They might also have deep enough pockets to make some changes, maybe some additional efficiencies at the paper that, you know, would maybe modernize it a little more than it is right now. So then another option would be a sale to a local owner. Now, whether that's a local individual, family, or business, or even a conglomeration of businesses that could buy it.
Will that work out? It seems like it might sway the paper's opinion.
It does make me a little nervous in the sense of you want to have that objective journalism, that you know, that fourth estate.
Right.
And if you have a conglomeration of local businesses who own the paper, is then it just going to be a vehicle of the Half Moon Bay Chamber of Commerce?
Exactly.
That makes me a little nervous. Now, the last idea is something that's pretty interesting that I had not considered, but I was approached by a local member of the community who's very involved in the community and is always thinking, which, you know, I love. Since I'm unable to do it myself, I love it when other people do it. It's one of those skills of, like, playing guitar. Like, wow, how do people do that, you know? So anyways, thinking. It's not just for breakfast anymore, if you'll recall. So his idea was kind of the Green Bay Packers ownership model. Now, the Green Bay Packers are a National Football League team, but they are owned by the community. They're essentially a cooperative. I don't think that's essentially right because there's no payout, but what the Green Bay Packers have done starting in 1923 when they were about to go bankrupt is they started selling common shares in the team. And so the community was able to buy shares in the team. Now, these shares do not pay a dividend. You cannot sell them. You don't profit from them. But you have this feeling of ownership. And so it...
You own a brick.
Yeah, right. As an article I read stated, you basically have joined a really expensive fan club.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. But it works, apparently, right? It's been working since 1922, for them at least.
Yeah, and what you see in Green Bay is this really emotional connection to the team because the people of the area feel like this is their team. And so this was the gentleman's idea here is that the community would buy shares. There would be a stock offering, a shares offering, and the community would buy shares. And they would have this intense feeling of ownership. So that sounds good on paper, but I wanted to look into the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, if they... What's that going to cost me to buy into the newspaper? That would be an interesting...
Yeah, so a little bit of research. I don't know how much WIC is expecting to get for the paper in the building. I think you heard some numbers.
I heard somebody mention maybe... just under $2 million. I mean, I think they're basing that on some other properties around the Main Street area that are for sale now, and they kind of did it that way. So I don't know that it's exactly correct.
Okay, so let's say $2 million is the asking price. There's 29,000 Coastsiders essentially from Pescadero to Montera, but that number is going to include X amount of children.
Right.
So let's just say, you know, a third of those are children. Let's be generous. So we're really talking to 18,000 so people. But let's just say the 29,000 number. If we went at the $250 mark, which is what the most recent offering of shares for the Green Bay Packers went for, $250.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at needing to sell 8,000 shares.
Okay. So there might be more than one individual who could purchase larger numbers of those shares. But is that something that we want to happen, or is there some sort of safeguard against somebody, I don't know, claiming most of the shares and wanting to be leadership in the newspaper?
What? Somebody might try to play the system and take control? This is the United States, other dude. Nobody would ever... Oh, wait.
Well,
that's right. This is capitalism. Yeah, okay. Good question. So what the Packers have done is they've stipulated that no one person can own more than 4% of this common stock.
Okay.
To prevent that kind of influence gathering because
monopolizing.
Yes, because one of the benefits that you get is you get invited to the shareholders meeting, and I believe that technically you have a vote. You know, when the board of directors is deciding who's going to, you know, have their elections, uh-huh. You get a vote.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you get a say on that level, but again, you don't get to...
You're never going to have controlling power.
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. And that's a model they don't want. So,
right.
Maximum 4% to any one person. So, I suppose that there's some families or individuals could purchase multiple shares and get that. But 8,000 shares, that's a lot of shares to sell in this small pool.
Well, it is, and that's why I was wondering, you know, about could people buy more than one share, but you don't want them to have too many shares. So, I don't know.
You know, we see models like, I guess we could call it a model like this, where we see Ocean View Park in Half Moon Bay and Frontierland in Pacifica. You see that they have fundraised for their projects by selling tiles, and then people can decorate a tile, and then that tile gets placed on a fence or somewhere near the structure or the park.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of a tribute to those people who donated money towards it. Essentially, that's the idea here, is that you might get listed on the page of owners or something, but you don't have operating control. You don't get to have a say in who gets hired or fired. You would only have your vote as a shareholder at the shareholders meeting, and the pride of ownership of, you know, we save this paper for our community. Well, let's back up a step. Do you think that – I think this is something people should consider in this day and age when print media is going under and newspapers are becoming like payphones and ashtrays where millennials – are asking what is that? What is that thing? What that thing that spins around and around and there's sounds that come out of it? What is that?
That's true. Maybe I know they have a digital footprint. The newspaper does,
yes.
But maybe go all digital,
completely digital. But what's an old fogey like me going to do on a Sunday morning after a couple of cups of coffee? I need something to...
I'm figuring you're probably going to have to spend about an hour in the bathroom after two cups of coffee. So,
well, listeners, while you ponder that, ponder this. This is live call-in talk radio. This is a show for the Coast Side for you to get your word in and your thoughts, and we're interested in those thoughts. When we come back from our commercial break in a few minutes, we're going to take some calls, and that number that you're going to want to call, write this down, 560-9851, and of course that's in the 650 area code for our national and international listeners, of which I know there are a few. You can email us at coastalwindage@gmail.com, or tweet us or like us on Facebook at Coastal Windage. Those are all ways that you can get in touch with us. We did receive a phone call last week and an email, and we're going to discuss that email today. We had a listener ask us about our thoughts on Martin's Beach. We'll deal with that today. So we're getting close to a commercial break here. We'd like to hear from our local merchants that support community radio here at KHMB. And that number, again, that you're going to want to call when we return, 560-9851. Give us a call. We'll take your calls in the order that we receive them. Just a quick reminder. This is probably a good time to mention this other dude.
Okay.
The thoughts, opinions... the words that come out of our mouths here on this show do not reflect the thoughts, opinions, and positions of the radio station or station owner Jim Henderson. These are our own thoughts and ideas that we have to carry the weight for. So please, if you're thrilled, if you're not thrilled, send us an email, send us a tweet. Give us a call. Let us know. Also, this is live radio. So when you call and you hear, hello, this is KHMB, you're live. You are live. Be ready to talk. Turn that radio down. Have a good thought. You know, give us some interesting takes. We really don't care what your position is, what your opinion is, but we want to hear it. And this is your chance to give us that. So that number again, 560-9851. And we will be right back. In about 3 minutes. Don't go away.
For 34 years, BK Motors has offered for sale the highest quality consignment vehicles on the Coastside, ranging from economy, mid-size, luxury, and sport utility vans and trucks, at times even commercial vehicles. Our Highway 1 location is perfect for displaying the vehicle you wish to sell. BK Motors also offers warranties and financing on approved credit.
Thanksgiving is the time we reflect on things we're thankful for. This is Bob Kay, and I'm thankful for you, the people of the Coastside who make this place a little bit of heaven. And a special thank you to our customers. Whether you've purchased one of our vehicles or had your vehicle detailed, thank you for your support.
Phone me at 726-8220 or see us online at bkmotors.com.
This is Benjamin Spellman of Lighthouse Water, next to the UPS store and the Straw Flower Center. For clean, pure, and good-tasting water, Coastsiders love Lighthouse Water. Galen Esslinger of Moss Beach has been one of our customers for over 10 years.
I love knowing Lighthouse Water has no chemicals and is as pure as water can get. And it costs less than off-the-shelf water at grocery stores, even less than Costco water. You gotta give Lighthouse Water a try.
Lighthouse Water, next to the UPS store in the Straw Flower Center. In the words of Lighthouse founder and my uncle Bill Ayers,
it's been said many times that Lighthouse Water is addictive. Not because we put something in the water, but because we try as hard as we can to take as much out of the water as possible. We are located in the Straw Flower Shopping Center by the UPS store. We are open 7 days a week. Come on in and have a drink on us. Lighthouse Water, the best place in town to have a drink. Of great tasting pure water, that is. Good health to you.
The holidays are here, and now comes all the stress. Getting things done. Running around town, if you could only save time. Well, you can at More for Less on Highway 1. Stop in for gas, fill up, but don't just leave. Walk inside and see everything More for Less has to help you relieve stress. Start with a hot cup of coffee, a Danish, maybe some chips or candy. And don't forget beer and wine. And scratchers also make that perfect gift. See? Less stress, all in one place. More for Less is there to help on Highway 1 and Kelly Avenue. For all those little things, remember, stop, look, and save at More for Less in Half Moon Bay today.
And we're back. Coastal Windage here. Ruben Truthmaker with the other dude. Okay, we're going to take some calls on the fact that the Half Moon Bay Review, the local newspaper that's been online here since 1898, is currently for sale. The parent corporation, WIC Communications, is going to be accepting offer letters or interested offers from potential buyers through December 15th. So you have until December 15th, listeners out there, to get your break your piggy bank, get your money together, and go in and start your own media empire. We were discussing with the other dude his dreams of a media empire. Well, we'll just stick with the radio show for now, and we'll see what happens over there at the paper.
Yes.
So that number to call, 560-9851 in the area code 650. You can also tweet us or like us on Facebook at Coastal Windage, or send us an email at coastalwindage@gmail.com.
What good does the local community newspaper serve?
Yeah, I mean, let's explore that question, because are newspapers even a thing anymore?
Well, they are, but I guess my question is, here on the coast side, is there enough news to warrant having a newspaper? If we've only got 29,000 people, and how much of a profit could there be in the thing, or is it just a labor of love?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to separate those questions. Let's set the business angle aside. Let's go with maybe the more intangibles of what value does a local paper bring to the community. Certainly there would be news. And though it's a small community, where it's a pretty large area of real estate, you know, from Montero to Pescadero, from the ocean to Skyline, basically, Highway 35. I mean, that's a lot of territory.
So there's a lot of diverse news, because all these areas are different as far as I've been able to ascertain.
That's true. If you go around, especially the unincorporated Midcoast, you might feel that, well, these are just all the same community, but you will find that each person in each of those communities feels differently. All right, well, let's. How about we take a call right now? We've got a caller. We'll see how that's going. Remember, when you hear us say good morning, you're live on KHMB. You are, in fact, live on KHMB. Well, be ready for that. Turn your radio down.
Good morning, caller. What's your name and what can we do for you?
All right. Well, that was a quick call. Okay.
Try again. If we're if it looks like we're busy, please just try again.
Right. The interns we have running the phone banks, well, you know, we gave them some coffee this morning. Probably we shouldn't have given them that extra rocket fuel coffee because I see a couple of them up on the ceiling right now. So go ahead and give us a call back. We're sorry about that. In the meantime, you know, the value of the local paper. Even though it's a small population, there's a lot going on out here.
There is.
This is the unincorporated county and also the city of Half Moon Bay. County's got a lot of stuff going on. Department of Public Works, you know, we've got the transportation issue we're dealing with out here. Housing is always an issue. These are important things. All right, let's see if we can take a call right now. Let's see what we got.
Good morning, caller.
I don't know. Somebody's playing phone tag with us there. Our phone door ding-dong ditch, I guess. Well, that's okay. At least somebody's calling. You know, I like that. I like to see the phone line up. But it's okay, callers. We won't bite. Go ahead and ask your question. All right. Well, while we're waiting for them to call back, so there is a lot of stuff going on. And if the local paper went away, whether it's just an online presence where there's actual a physical paper that gets delivered or you can get it a paper box or not, there is stuff happening, and if this local paper goes away, where are you going to hear about what happened at the Midcoast Community Council meeting, or where the Half Moon Bay City Council stands on their cannabis ordinance? It seems like this is one of those things I think where it would really be you don't miss it till it's gone, and then you really are bummed.
Yeah, I agree with that. They do. People might denigrate publications, paper publications, but they serve a great purpose.
Yeah, so there's the news, and you know, then there's the true intangible of it's a community resource, it's a community presence, it's a rallying point for the community. Every person who's raised a child on this coast side has probably had their child's name in the paper at some point. And that's one of those things you love to clip it out, you like to put it on the fridge, send it to grandma or grandpa. I mean, I understand that shouldn't be the sole role of the paper, and that's not a reason to have a business, but it's an important part of the coast side, growing up in a small town. And I think that it would be one of those things of if it went away, people would be pretty bummed. So
I'd like to see the newspaper continue.
I would definitely.
I would want some kind of plan to try to get it to work.
What about the idea of it just being a digital presence and no actual paper?
Well, that's a pretty good idea, but at the same time, there's issues with does everybody have internet access? Does everybody have a device that they can jump on there and check for local news at the .com site? And this isn't a topic we're going to talk about today, but I think we will be pretty quickly in the future. The whole net neutrality thing, they may not have access. They may not be able to afford access to it.
So with the idea of net neutrality going away,
right,
might we see a resurgence of newspapers?
I don't know if it will go that far. I hope what happens is there's going to be no loss of net neutrality. But it's something that we now have to put on the plate and see how we deal with it.
Yeah, that might be a topic for another show.
Yes.
Coastsiders, think about that. Think of how net neutrality might affect your personal life, might affect the coast side. And, you know, it could definitely affect the coast side. Well, let's get back to the announcement of the sale. This came as kind of a surprise to me. I really didn't have a sense of this.
There hadn't been much talk about.
However... on November 1st, the Review ran a story that publisher Bill Murray was leaving. He had been publisher since 2011. I believe he took over for Deborah Godshock, I believe, was the previous publisher. When I saw that, it made me pause for a second. And in retrospect, you know, you got to trust your instinct, whether you're out in the field, you know, hunting, or you're playing ball and you sense that the ball is going to be hit in a certain spot. And so when I read that article, something tickled my instinct of that's interesting, because I know Bill. I've seen Bill around town. He's a fixture. He likes to ride his bike to work, so I like to ride my bike, so I connect with him on that. But, you know, I hadn't heard that he was interested in leaving, and he took a position with the Half Moon Bay Golf Links over at the Ritz-Carlton, which also seemed an odd transition, and so it just struck me as interesting.
So you think he may have had wind of it earlier, possibly? It makes sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to give Bill a hard time. You do what you got to do, but in the sense of this kind of came out of nowhere that the paper was going to be sold, but the fact that the publisher left 2 weeks earlier, in retrospect, that might have been a clue. I'm curious if Wick sells the paper, and what is going to happen with current editor Clay Lambert, who, as I mentioned, is also the creative director for Wick Corporate. If Wick sells the Half Moon Bay Review, is Clay going to leave as well? And that would be a major disruption in the management chain there of the paper. Clay, I know sometimes people in the community get on Clay. I mean, as a focal figure, I think he expects that.
True.
But, you know, Clay's got some chops. He's got 30 years in the business. He was recently elected to the Colorado State University Media Hall of Fame. So he knows what he's doing, and losing him from the community would be a blow, in my opinion.
And, well, it's not something that I want to talk about or think about, but if someone else buys the newspaper, there could be lots of people's jobs over there that are sort of on the edge of whether they're going to keep the staff, change staff. It's a pretty big deal.
That is a concerning thing, especially when we're talking about corporations and they buy assets and maybe they part out the assets. They buy something like the Half Moon Bay Review and take the real estate and just divest the paper completely. The article that was run in the Half Moon Bay Review about this on November 22nd did say that they intended to keep things currently as it is. But
until there's a sale.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
and I guess that's another factor we need to take into consideration, is that they may not find a buyer for a while.
Yeah, I wonder what Wick's plan is if there's no interest. But here's the thing. With the building itself being included in the sale, they are going to get a buyer, if for nothing else, for the building itself.
And it looks like we have another caller.
Well, let's see if we actually do.
Good morning, caller. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I just want to have you guys discuss a little bit what the most likely outcome of the sale of the newspaper is.
Okay, who are we speaking to this morning?
This is Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Okay, so Michelle, we had like three likely scenarios. It could be purchased by another corporate conglomeration. It could be purchased maybe by a local entity, a family, an individual, or a group of companies. Or the idea that a local citizen is thinking about, that there'd be common shares sold to the community. But Michelle, I'm curious, what do you think might happen?
I think the most likely thing is that someone's going to buy the building, shut down the newspaper, and then utilize the building to make profit in some other way.
Yeah.
That is a distinct possibility.
And what is your feeling about that? How do you feel about the paper as a coastal resource, about it being, you know, turned into some other kind of business?
I think it's a great resource. And, you know, like you said, I've had my kid's name in the newspaper. I had my kid's picture in the newspaper. So I really like that aspect, that it's such a small place that you could actually, you know, have this line into the things that, you know, your family does on a day-to-day basis. Happy things, you know, not just unhappy things that larger newspapers seem to focus on. And so my biggest concern is that because, I mean, my understanding is that the newspaper attempted to have an online presence, but it became so contentious that they had to shut down the actual discussion area of the newspaper.
Michelle, you were referring to the talk about section of the paper, is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that that experience is disconcerting because I think that, in my opinion, the direction for all news is going to be digital, and the fact that an attempt to do that around here didn't work out very well at all, who knows, maybe there was aspects of how it was done that altered their ability to be successful, but, it just makes me nervous that experience there might push the direction of the newspaper getting shut down, and then we won't have that resource any longer.
Well, let me ask you the $250 question, Michelle. What is your price point? First of all, would you be interested in buying common share, a common stock in the paper? And what would be your price point?
It would be something to definitely consider. I mean, if you could get enough people interested to actually save the paper, so to speak. I think I would be I'd be much more on board if that was the sole way for the newspaper to continue to exist than I would be for that to be just a choice. Because I mean, I do think that there are issues with decision making issues, very basic decision making issues as to how it would work with the share situation. I mean, like for example, how does the Green Bay Packers do it? I mean, there's got to be someone making the decisions, like who's going to be the coach and all that kind of stuff. How does that happen? Is it all delegated to some other setup that they organize?
I believe that the Packers have a setup just like any other pro team, from the office on down to players. It's just where they got the fundage for that was from these stocks that they sold.
Doesn't the owner usually have like a ultimate say in that kind of stuff?
Well, nowadays with NFL owners, maybe we don't need those owners anymore. Maybe this is the way to go with all of it, so that the people are part of it instead of some rich guy that has opinions that practically nobody wants to hear.
Well, what I've read about the Packers, Michelle, is that they have a board of directors that is elected by the shareholders, which are the people of Green Bay, or the people that have purchased this stock. They don't necessarily have to be citizens of the city of Green Bay.
Okay.
And that board of directors runs the entity that is the corporation, Green Bay Packers. But as far as on-field decisions, personnel decisions, those are handled by the professional football people, just as Wick and Clay Lambert are saying would. I mean, excuse me, just as the local citizen who's proposing this concept for the paper imagines the paper being run, that there would be a board of directors that would be elected, and those board of directors would make business financial decisions, but they would not have access to making editorial decisions, which I think is an important, if we're talking about a media outlet, that's an important bulwark to have, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the big distinction. I mean, that's where it feels less likely to succeed to me, is if editorial decision-making became this ball that was being pushed back and forth between the owner group and the leaders of the business.
Yeah, that's always the question when it comes to corporate media, as we see on TV. Michelle, we're up against a commercial break right now. Thank you so much for the call. That was a fantastic call. Really appreciate it. Please call us again. We really appreciated that call. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
So the number again, if you want to call, we're going to be going to a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about Martin's Beach, which was a query from one of our listeners from last week. What's happening with that? What did we think is going to go on with that? The number to call, 560-9851. Give us a call. We want to hear what you have to say. That was a great call from Michelle. That's the kind of call we're looking for. Respectful, informed, inquisitive, and willing to play with us. You know, we want to know what you think and what your position is, and this is your chance to speak, CoSide. So give us a call, 560-9851. We'll see you in 3 minutes.
Is your estate planning up to date? If something were to happen to you unexpectedly, will your assets go to your preferred family members or organizations, or would they go to someone else? If you were injured or suddenly became ill, would your preferred family member or friend be able to make health care decisions for you? A lot of people, including many with living trusts or their children, end up having to pay thousands of dollars in unnecessary taxes when they sell their homes, either because they didn't have an up-to-date estate plan or because the title to their property was not held in the best way for their situation. If you have not reviewed your plan recently, I urge you to do so. This is Ed Daniels of the law firm Corey, Luzich, DiGataldi, Nastari, and Riddle. I would be happy to review your estate plan with you. Please phone my office at 650-726-7578 for a no-obligation appointment to discuss your estate planning goals and options, or visit us on the web at coreylaw.com. That's coreylaw.com. Thank you.
This is Judy O'Leary asking you to light the way to a brighter holiday by participating in the Christmas Bureau Adopt-A-Family program of Coastside Hope. Help one of our local low-income families or a senior by adopting them through this holiday program. Recipients of this program are people who work and live here on the Coastside between Monterra and Half Moon Bay. You purchase essential clothing requested by your adopted family, working from a profile wish list. Cash donations welcome, or be a volunteer to help in some other needed way. For more information, please call me, Judy O'Leary, at 273-3967. My number again is 273-3967. Adopt a family and light the way to a brighter holiday for a family or senior on the Coastside. Thank you.
If you have appliances, a furnace, water heater, or fireplace, then please take down this phone number, 712-0100. That's the number of Coastside Technical Services. Whether residential or commercial, Coastside Technical Services has been helping Coastsiders since 1988 with experience served with integrity. Need duct cleaning? Then you need Coastside Technical Services. Problems with your washer, dryer, or refrigerator? Then you need Coastside Technical Services. Not having any problems with anything right now? Then you need to take down their phone number and keep it handy. When you need help right away, you need Coastside Technical Services. Ready? 712-0100. 712-0100. Coastside Technical Services.
And we're back. That's right. We're still here. Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, the Coastside's only live call-in talk radio show. This is Reuben Truthmaker here with the other dude. We were just having a spirited discussion on the proposed sale of the Half Moon Bay Review. Well, it's not a proposed sale. It is up for sale. We don't know who any of the prospective buyers are. We were talking about that. But let's go to another curious piece of property here on the Coastside, and that is Martin's Beach. Now, Martin's Beach is the contentious property south of town. It's about
6 miles.
Yeah, it's you go past Arada's Pumpkin Farm. It's just past Verde Road on the ocean side. There's a little parking lot there. There's a gate that has been padlocked recently that has been ordered to be opened. And down that road, if you've ever been down there, it goes down to the beach, and there's a pretty amazing beach down there with some very interesting kind of geologic structures out in the water, stacks, I believe they're called. So it's quite an interesting place.
Yeah. So a gentleman bought it 2013, something like that, I believe. And prior to that, it had been open to the public for literally decades. I know in the last few years, the previous owners charged some minimal price for parking down there, and everybody seemed happy with that arrangement. This fellow bought the thing. He's apparently has quite a lot of money.
Fortune magazine lists him as a billionaire. Vinod Khosla, co-founder of Sun Microsystems and a well-known venture capitalist.
So he is not cash-strapped. I wonder if he'd like to buy a newspaper. joking. But he decided that since he owned the property between the highway and the beach itself, that he could close down the public access to it. And ever since, there has been this legal juggling going back and forth about, yes, he can close it down, no, he can't close it down. Right now, it sets that the gate is open, and he is planning on filing with the state Supreme Court, right? He wants to challenge the coastal...
Well, the attorney for the Surf Rider Foundation, who is in a lawsuit over this property, attorney Joe Kochet, this is per an article in the Half Moon Bay Review. So attorney Joe Kochet believes that COSLA's ultimate angle
plan
here is to challenge the Coastal Act in the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, the Coastal Act of 1976, one of the main points of this Coastal Act is to ensure public access to the ocean, to the beach.
As it should be.
Right. Well, I mean, we think so, but I'm sure there's entities out there that disagree with that. So possibly even Mr. Kosla. So that's what Attorney Joe Kochet thinks the angle is here. Some important things to note. Yes, Mr. Kosla purchased this property in 2008. He bought the property from the Deeney family, who had purchased the property in the early 1900s, and with the Watts family had kind of managed that over time. Now, so that's an important factor here, is this idea that there was, that this road was being used for coastal access and there was a small parking fee charge. You know, this is decades long, you know, this idea,
it sets a pretty
expectation.
It sets a pretty good precedence about how things have been handled for a long time.
So not only that it violates the Coastal Act, but it also violates people's institutional memory on this issue of, like, you know, this is kind of a coastside tradition of going to Martin's Beach. People love the beach. They love to surf there. They love to go to the beach, and suddenly now it's locked down to them. That's a little hard for people to take.
And at the same time, he's claiming that it's private property, but I know people are still, even when the gate was locked, people were still parking up near the highway.
Yeah.
Bicycling or walking down there and doing the exact same thing, surfing, swimming, fishing. So has he set a precedence of keeping people out, really?
Well, he tried to keep people from even walking down there, riding their bikes down there, but he was overruled by that. And he has tried locking the gate. And on October 4th, the Coastal Commission issued a cease and desist deadline that he needed to unlock the gate, which apparently he has.
And I know when he first put the gate up, he had actual physical security down there for a short period of time, right?
I never saw them, but that's not surprising and a little disconcerting.
But again, it didn't last,
and
so he's sort of given up on the idea of, I don't want anybody coming down here. I don't know. Does that help his case? I don't think so.
This really seems like an issue that kind of goes in fits and starts, but hasn't really seemed to go anywhere. Recently, State Senator Jerry Hill, who's from this area, sponsored SB 42 in the California legislature, which is a bill that would have provided a funding mechanism for state agencies to claim a portion of the property by eminent domain. Now, eminent domain, them's fighting words around here, right?
Yeah, pretty much anywhere, I believe.
I mean, if there's a way to do this without eminent domain, it needs to be done. However, if we're going to have an intransient landowner who refuses to abide by the Coastal Act, well, you know, now we've got a situation where something's got to give somewhere. And
well, I think eminent domain would probably be way down the list of legal actions to take. I think there's probably a strong case for just public access, that just because you buy a property doesn't mean that you now control what has been public access. He's made some complaints about that people on the beach threaten his privacy or whatever. He should have made perhaps a better choice on buying property that people wouldn't be coming through. He still has the right to privacy. If people leave the beach and go onto his property, he can take action against them. Or he can throw up a 15-foot-tall fence all around his property, leaving the road open, and he still has his privacy. But I don't think it means that you can shut down public access.
Well, let me just ask you this. if nothing changed right now, let's just say that he still had the gate locked. Okay, there's still a gravel parking pad up at Highway 1, and it's about a quarter mile walk down, and it's kind of steep down, and so that means it's kind of steep up. But you know, it's a quarter mile each direction. Is that too much to ask? I mean, what's wrong with that situation? Why does anything have to change if he's allowing people to go down there? They just can't drive down there.
I think at some point they're afraid that he's going to throw up heavier resistance again.
Yeah.
If he wants to turn it into his super fancy palatial beach house down there, that he may then decide, I'm going to have security down here all the time, and doing the same thing, closing off public access.
I mean, this is the you know, one of the many issues. But okay, I think I read somewhere that he's still planning on closing the gate at night and at other off hour times. I mean, that seems somewhat prudent.
I won't complain if he wants to lock the thing at sundown and unlock it at sunup or however he might want to do it. But during the hours when people are interested in being down there, they should have public access.
All right, let me ask you this. Put your legal scholar hat on.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's already on. Okay. Yeah,
that pointed.
somebody's walking down the road and they have a trip and fall. Is he liable?
If he sets it up as being public access, I doubt that he would be liable. But
really?
If he's claiming the property,
yeah,
then there may be.
So kind of in a current situation like this.
But at the same time, if he's claiming the property and you file a lawsuit against him because you twisted your ankle or busted your knee or something walking down the road, he's going to charge you with trespassing.
So recently, Post, Peninsula Open Space Trust, purchased about 50 or so acres at the Tinnitus Creek beachhead.
Uh-huh.
Because that has become the latest party spot, where, I mean, just bags and bags of trash, just tons, 200, 300 people on Saturday nights going down there.
Wow.
So the county had to get involved in that because it was just getting out of control. And now Post has purchased the property, and usually that works out into kind of a partnership where they steward the land for a while and eventually transfer it to the county or sell it to the county.
Yep.
So that may be what's happening there. It could be that Mr. Khosla just, you know, eventually sees the writing on the wall and sells this property possibly to Post or the county, or, I mean, that could be a resolution down the line.
Do you know what the price was for the property that they just bought?
I do, in fact. The price for the property that he just bought.
Because that would be interesting to know. I know at one point he made the offer to sell the road that runs from the highway down to the beach for about $30 million, which is a couple of million bucks less than what he paid for the whole property.
$32.5 million.
That's what the property down by Martin's Beach cost. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other idea what the other property you were just talking about?
Oh, I do not. No, I'm sorry. I do not. The Post property at Tunita's Beach.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't have a price on that. And I'm not sure how. Oh, 53 acres here at Martin's Beach for $32.5 million. But that includes some buildings and some other infrastructure like the road, whereas Tunitas Creek, I think, is, I was almost going to say pristine, but that.
But undeveloped.
Yes, undeveloped, yeah.
Trashed up, but undeveloped.
Well, it's hard for me to believe, but we're already up against another commercial break. This hour just flies by. I love talking with you. I love hearing from the community. We got that one phone call. Hopefully we can get another one on the flip side here. We're going to come back and talk about, really, Coastside. Get in on this one, okay? Why do we have such a thing? Yeah, please tell me. Black Friday. Ay, ay, ay. Okay, we're going to talk about that on when we come back on the flip side. Give us a call, 560-9851 in the 650 area code, and we will talk to you in 3 minutes.
Sterling Court Retirement Community in San Mateo strives to offer the finest senior living on the peninsula. Just ask Coastside resident Kevin O'Brien of Half Moon Bay.
My mother and her sister wanted to move to a senior retirement community close to where my brothers and I live. They visited a number of senior communities on the peninsula and chose Sterling Court. They made that decision based on the many amenities, such as full kitchens. And there are a lot of fun activities, and it's a terrific location. Sterling Court is less than 30 minutes away from Half Moon Bay and offers my mother and her sister easy access to shopping, restaurants, medical facilities, churches, parks, and more. Sterling Court really is a great community for seniors.
Find out more by calling Sterling Court to arrange a tour and complimentary lunch. Their number, 344-8200. They are located at 850 El Camino Avenue at the crossroads of Burlingame, Hillsboro, and San Mateo.
Tired of running into people you don't know? Maybe it's time to get your eyes checked. Well, carefully drive over to Half Moon Bay Optometry Family Eye Care. They're located in the Strawflower Shopping Center next to Hallmark. Call 726-EYES, that's 726-3937, and schedule your appointment today with Dr. Netta Moshasha. Your full complete exam is only $169 and includes visual and dilation. Most insurance is accepted, including care credit. Half Moon Bay Optometry also specializes in kids to keep their eyes healthy so they can grow up seeing great. Remember, they're located right next to Hallmark in the Strawflower Shopping Center. Call them today, 726-EYES, to set up your next appointment.
If you have recently moved here, let us welcome you to our lovely Coastside community. On behalf of Shepherd Family Dentistry, this is Brian Shepherd with a personal invitation. If you are in need of dental services, we would love to meet you. For over 30 years, the Shepherd family has been serving residents with a number of different services, including routine cleanings, implants, root canals, and one-day crowns. We are located at 890 Main Street in Half Moon Bay. You can reach us at 726-3355. Come in and pay us a visit. We will make you feel right at home. Or you can pay us a visit at our website, shepherddentists.com.
Shepherd Family Dentistry, 890 Main Street. Phone 726-3355. Shepherd Family Dentistry.
Where we bring your smile to life.
And we're back with Coastal Windage. This is Ruben Truthmaker with the other dude. Get out the blood pressure bracelet there. This is one that just my head is, you're picking pieces of it off the ceiling. Black Friday.
It's okay that you love Black Friday.
But I don't. It's everything that's wrong with America, isn't it?
I have to agree. Yeah.
All right, for anybody that's living in a hole, Black Friday is the traditional day of shopping gluttony and corporate
greed
that occurs on the Friday after Thanksgiving. let me give you some stats on that will make your mustache hairs curl. In 2015, 74 million people left their homes on Friday and went out into the world to go shopping.
Wow.
I guess for holiday gifts. I don't know why else you would be shopping. 102 million Americans shopped in stores, not online, on Black Friday in 2016. 102 million Americans.
And you think they're probably predicting for more this year?
That would be my guess, yes.
Wow. So here's my thought.
Yeah.
Because it's the way my brain works, is that there are at least 106 million homes out there right now unprotected because the families are out spending money at the mall. Burglaries have to skyrocket on this day.
Well, you know what's unprotected is people's pride. I mean, I'm sorry, but what is drawing all these people out there on a Friday that they're hoping to save
$5 on their new Nintendo setup?
And that's what I mean. I mean, America, stop with that already. Do you not get it? There's no such thing as a deal. Okay, there's no such thing as a deal. The prices have either been marked up ahead of time, and so now you're 40% off of you're actually getting probably 5% above what it was 6 months ago. And even if there is a deal, on what? Do you remember, like...
I understand that nowadays what they're doing is a lot of times they're selling their old models from last year, and then 2 weeks from now you'll be able to go in and buy the brand new model that's supposed to have more features.
And so you're going to stand in line for 6 or 8 hours on Thanksgiving because now that Black Friday starts 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day. So Thursday
should be angry that Black Friday has creeped into its time and it's not getting recognition for it.
Well, it's America. Expect a lawsuit on that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's no such thing as a free lunch. This is corporate America. If you're standing in line for a deal on Black Friday, I'm sorry. It's like that adage, you know, if you look around and you can't figure out who the sucker is.
It's probably you.
If you're standing in line for 8 hours to buy some piece of gadgetry that you don't need because you feel obligated to buy a Christmas present or because it's 25% off, guess what? Guess who's the sucker, in my opinion. But America loves it. It's Black Friday. I think it's a black eye on America Friday, but okay. Have you ever shopped on Black Friday?
I'm going to be honest and say no. Because I like to do my shopping at off times. I go buy groceries early in the morning.
Yes.
I go to dinner a half an hour early so that I can get into a restaurant and not have to wait.
You leave the ball game in the seventh inning so you don't have
well,
to
face only if my only if my team's losing. Only if my team's losing. They're winning, I'm there till the end.
Oh, nice.
But I'm not going to rush out into a crowd of people to try to get some item that I can probably buy somewhere else for almost the same price in a much less stressful situation.
And a much safer situation. A website called BlackFridayDeathCount.com. No, I have not actually clicked on the site, so, you know, clicker beware. But that is a website that I've seen. Lists 10 dead and 100 injured in Black Friday incidents since 2006, and that would include stampedes,
right,
stabbings,
oh,
shootings, what? And fist fights.
That seals the deal for me. I am not doing Black Friday now or at any other time in the foreseeable future.
Well, when I hear those kind of statistics about a manufactured event like Black Friday, completely manufactured corporate capitalist event like Black Friday, one word comes to mind, and the people – what is this? The Walking Dead just out there, you know, with their hands out like
must Frank have gifts.
Get in line, Black Friday. One word comes to mind. Sheeple.
Sheeple.
You know, just get in line, stay in your little chute there, and be ready to get fleeced.
But it sounds like there are some violent sheeple out there.
Right.
I don't want to risk my pride by going out to try to to buy a package of tube socks and have some sweet little old grandma knock me to the ground and take my socks away from me. So I'm not going.
Your pride, other dude, that ship has sailed, I'm sorry to say.
True.
with my little dinghy in tow as well. I get this a lot when I was mentioning to various fans of the show that we would be talking about Black Friday. Where does that name come from? What's the deal with Black Friday? So I did some research, and this is according to the internet. Now, let me just qualified. This story sounds very internet-y in the sense that I clicked on several different links and stories about the origin of the name Black Friday.
Right.
They all had the same 4 or 5 data points in there as if they were all taken from a single source, you know, made up or not. I don't know, but this is what I found out. The name started in Philadelphia in the 1960s, and it was in reference – the traffic cops would always say how bad the traffic was going to be on this day, and so they referred it as Black Friday. It was just a really bad day for traffic and for them. Predictably, merchants realized, Black Friday, we have Black Monday, the stock market crash, Black Tuesday, the other stock market crash, not really a good thing. So they remarketed it in that now it's the day when merchants go from the red to the black. And speaking of going from the red to the black, we're fading to black already on this show. I can't believe it. We've completed another hour of Coastal Windage. This is our second show. We're on KHMB 100.9 FM, 1710 AM, streaming live on khmbradio.com from 9 to 10 every Friday, including Black Friday.
Black Friday.
We're here.
Yes.
Yeah, providing you your intellectual sustenance and your intellectual products. You can send us an email at coastalwindage@gmail.com. Tweet us or like us on Facebook @coastalwindage. Well, next week, I'm not sure. we're not sure what we're going to talk about next week because this is kind of a topical show. We wait and see what's coming up on the coastside, what's burbling up, what are the things that people are talking to us about. Some of those things that people are constantly talking about would be traffic, of course, the housing situation as it relates to traffic, school busing as it relates to traffic. So kind of a theme there with traffic. But last week we discussed cannabis, and that is still a hot topic. Yeah. So we'll see what it is. Give us a tweet, a like on Facebook, or an email at coastalwindage@gmail.com. Let us know what you would like us to talk about.
Because we're happy to talk about it.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week, Friday, 9 a.m. Not 9 p.m., 9 a.m. That's morning time.
All right. Ruben Truthmaker, the other dude, we're out. See you next week.